I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track Open Line, Customer Relationship Management. Everything is accomplished through relationships. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we'll jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time, Lighthouse provides in-depth work style and personality assessments for both new hire candidates and for staff development. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations, and if you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track Open Line series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we'll be turning off the recording equipment. We've found that a number of those attending don't like to have their voices recorded when participating in that part of the program, and we'll open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since we'll be sharing many ideas that you'll want to consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. Our special guest with us today is Tom Drucker, who is a longtime friend, business colleague, extremely cool guy, and so knowledgeable. You're going to really enjoy this program today and getting to know Tom. Tom's work focuses on helping leaders achieve business success by leveraging the strengths of their people and overcoming the very human yet often unseen obstacles that get in the way. I've seen Tom's work with individuals and groups to help them achieve remarkable results, and they really do achieve remarkable results. Tom has degrees both in psychology and business from UCLA and blends these skills to deliver usable insights that have lasting impacts on their business and, most importantly, on the hearts and minds of the people he works with. I feel privileged to have Tom with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic will be, what about technology that can transform your business today? Tom, welcome.
Well, thank you, Dan. It's a privilege and a pleasure to be with you and the online community here. I'm happy to talk about a subject that's close to my heart and also my professional practice. As we were saying in the lead-up to beginning this, many of my customers that I'm working with on strategy or on leadership are realizing the importance of customer service, particularly when business is challenging, because the cost of acquiring a new customer is substantial. And, I think we all know what happens when a dissatisfied customer kind of goes into the marketplace to talk about their upsets. But let's talk a little bit about what our program is today. It says everything is accomplished through relationships. We'll dig into that a little bit more. But if we look at the next slide here, I want to invite each of you to clarify for yourself what you'd like to get out of today's conversation. And as Dana mentioned, there is a chat box here. So those of you in conference rooms where there is a computer, feel free to, just take a minute and share amongst yourselves what you'd like to get out, and maybe someone will be brave enough to enter a few keystrokes, and those of you sitting in front of computers could help us by tailoring the presentation to what you want by letting us know some of your issues, questions, or concerns, or challenges about customer service. I wanted to say at the beginning that very often people listen to the phrase CRM, and what they think of is software, because as I'm sure many of you know, there are quite robust systems on the marketplace that are designed to help manage customer relationships. Those systems can be quite useful, but again, like any software, I suspect we're all savvy enough to know the tool doesn't produce the result. People using the tool produce the results. So what we're going to talk about today is primarily the people. Their mindset, their attitude, their behaviors, and their actions, and the impacts that those make. So, Dana, do we have any, I'm not familiar with where I would look to see if people have typed in questions or things they'd like to get out of today. But if we have, let me know, and in the absence of that, I will proceed maybe with the next slide. But if you do have things that are of importance to the number of companies and people online, I would be happy to respond to them. Anything before we go on to the next slide, Dana? Okay, I'm going to go on to the next slide. Who are your customers? Externally, you know, pretty simple. They're the people who either pay the bills or the people who your products or services touch. And one of the questions I always ask my clients is, do you know the actual cost of acquiring a customer, retaining a customer, and losing a customer? And very often those costs are hidden, and so it takes a little bit of effort to determine what those costs are. But one of the things that my colleagues and I have noticed in our work with customer service is when you make the frontline workers aware of the economics of customer service, and you demonstrate through your behaviors and through your support of the frontline customer service people, whether they be in call centers or in the field, or they are salespeople who have a customer service component to their job, when leadership makes the workforce aware of the economic impact of sustaining a customer, it's very important. Now, having said that, I want to also say that sometimes companies can get so aggressive in fixing a complaint that they give away their margins. So this is another reason why it's so important to know the true costs. I'm thinking of a particular company right now who had some supply chain issues, therefore their products were late, and they did something that any company would do, is they started to ship the late products by FedEx as opposed to ground shipping. And the person who did it seemed to be doing it within the context of knowing what the costs were. But as it turned out, when they looked at the quarter, the company was in the red because they hadn't realized week to week, month to month, just how many air shipments were being approved, because it just became the norm and everyone was shipping everything by air. So again, having costs, and clearly having costs, pretty important. Internally, there are many customer relationships that also matter. We were chatting before the live broadcast here about a company that has acquired some new companies through acquisitions, some new employees rather through acquisitions by acquiring the companies. And all of a sudden, there are many new internal relationships that matter. And yet, very often, certain people feel they can be less than gracious to the people that are around them because they all have the same badge. And I suspect this is something just to be mindful of, because I suspect most people who would be on this call would know that and would appreciate that. And we'll touch on it a little bit later as well in a couple of different ways. Customer relationship management, defining what it is. What I find is it's a mindset. We'll talk about that in a moment. It's also a process. Process is something defined very simply as the way certain parts of work gets done, and because it's a process, activities can be measured. So customer relationships are very often not thought of in this way. They're just thought of as what people do, and it becomes kind of obvious and ordinary. What we find in companies that are excelling and beating out their competition in the marketplace is products that have good quality also need to be delivered and serviced and supported in ways that make the company easy to do business with, and therefore it's beyond product quality. It's what some people call delivered quality, which is the entire experience. And very often, we all have experiences in our personal and professional life where we might really want a product, but the company is so difficult to do business with, we'd rather have some other product or service rather than do business with that company. We're going to talk a little bit about process and mindset in the following slides.
Tom, can we go back for a second?
Sure.
There are a couple questions. First of all, we have a lot of people on the line today, and the line is testing clear, but a couple people said they were having problems with the audio. So if you could just redial in, I think you'll find the line should clear up. We have a couple questions. One is from John, and I'm just going to read it. I manage a production facility for a large company with many experts dedicated to customer interface. I have limited opportunity to directly speak to customers by chance. What can I do to be proactive and have a personal strategy for developing a direct rapport with my customers? And then as you discuss that one, there's another question.
Sure. It's a great question. What I have seen work very well is randomly calling a customer and introducing yourself and just tell them exactly what you're doing, that you are a person who believes in the importance of customer service and you've picked them out either at random or because they're a high-value customer and you want to just make sure that they know your name and number and they're invited to tell you what their experience is like doing business with your company and that you collect that information. Do that with 10 people, write up a short report, summarizing that, send it around to your internal colleagues, and make sure that the people who are your frontline folks within the factory have a sense of the kinds of both benefits of doing business with your firm as well as some of the outages and what the learning are from those corrected outages. Showing that individual attention can have huge benefits because the people know that you care, that you're reaching out. So I hope that question gives you some actionable activity. What was the other question, Dana?
Yes. Thank you, John. That was great. Ted, do you need to purchase an expensive software system in order to have an effective CRM process?
It's a great question, and the answer is not necessarily. What's important is to have a database that's up to date and that it's used. One of the cornerstones of a customer relationship management database is that you will have people from different parts of the company contacting different parts of your customer base, different, you know, functions. The finance folks can call finance people, the shipping people can call the receiving people, the sales people can call the, people who are actually purchasing. It's important to have collected into one place that's easily accessible a file so that people can read the history of the contact business to business. That's what a CRM system helps with. It also helps set milestones and making sure that people are contacted with a certain degree of frequency. And depending on the sophistication of the system, it can also help manage margins and other kinds of financial data with add-ons. But the most important thing in having a CRM is a CRM process. You could use Outlook for this. You could use notes attached to the customer contacts that are aggregated within a certain firm. So I've seen Outlook be used, which saves, obviously, lots of money. And I've seen very good use of programs like Salesforce.com and other CRM-centric systems. What's really critical is how your employees use them. And very often, they are not well used. And it's not because people aren't trained. It's because there is no discipline. And so people are kind of keeping their own files and not sharing them. People wait until a month has passed to update the contact information or the issues that were resolved. And so the knowledge that's supposedly embedded in the CRM system isn't. And when that fails, then no matter how good or expensive the system is or how many automatic updates it sends people to remind them, we all know how those can become just background noise.
Good point. I'm going to take one more question for now, and so we can keep the program moving. This question is from Leon. I just returned from a practice management conference sponsored by FPA. One takeaway was a service model for ABCD, et cetera, clients. Do you have templates for a financial planning firm? Thank you, Leon.
Yeah, there are templates for financial planning firms that basically, if I'm understanding the question right, different levels of clients require and receive different levels of service. I think that's what the question is about.
Yes.
And yes, there are, it's actually important for the company to set those kinds of guidelines so you don't have, I'm working right now with a partner in a CPA firm, and one of the things we're trying to do is migrate that firm from lots of smaller clients to a few larger clients, because the level of service required for those smaller clients, there's a baseline, and the cost of servicing those clients, which did get them to a certain level of success as a firm, now the cost of that is dramatic because they've got a lot of them. So, yes, the simple answer is there are templates for levels of service, and what it does, it requires people to go through a set of questions and answers and set policy. And then, of course, the most important thing is to guide the client and to give the client the proper expectations for what level of service they're going to get, and hopefully, if they want more, to see if they're willing to pay more.
Oh, that's good. Quick comment, and then one more question. Then we're going to take one more question, then we're going to move on. We're going to have Chris Horn on our program in another couple months or so to talk about specifically CRM systems. And Chris also had sent me a note, and he said there are predefined templates for CRM systems designed especially for financial planners and financial advisors. So he'll be addressing that in another month or two. I want to take one more question from Lori. Again, we have this is a full house today, and but let's take this last one, then we'll move on. I manage a delivery team that works with many organizations that hire contractors to implement our software. I find it challenging to get beyond contractors to the executive stakeholders when issues impact the project that are caused by the contractor, who inevitably blames our organization rather than accepting responsibility and possibly jeopardizing their position. Any thoughts on that, or you want to do that offline?
No, I mean, I'm happy to do it online and offline. I mean, I can sort of send a couple of messages, and then I'm happy to talk to that person individually.
Okay.
Again, I don't know specifically the kinds of relationships that the question asker has with the contractors, but it's so important. I'm thinking of a specific client who has a network of technical contractors. But part of the agreement is that the contractor will provide access and support to the customers, but also allow the primary customer, I mean the primary provider, to have access to those people. There needs to be a clear channel of communication between, in this case I think it was a software provider and the end user. And if a contractor is in the middle, so to speak, that needs to be contractually understood that they should have access. And if you can't negotiate that contract, you should probably consider, changing the contract and changing the relationship. Because, and I think this is on a slide, but if it isn't, I'm sure we all know it. One upset customer relationship can suck up so much time and energy that, again, the value of that interaction or transaction is sucked up in the repair and recovery. So being proactive about these things, indicating to your contractors that you want those kinds of relationships, you need them, it's essential. That may help, and I'll be happy to talk to the person, Dana, offline.
Okay, perfect. Thank you for saying that. Let's go to the next slide, and then, again, keep throwing questions on it. We just want to keep the program moving also.
Yeah, great questions. The more the better. Understanding the competitive landscape of your industry and your market. again, the last questioner, I know there are certain cases where it's more difficult to get access because the contractor is more protective. But again, you can use the competitive landscape for your advantage. Learning is an important competitive advantage. So knowing what specific competitors are, defining your value proposition in the marketplace, critical. Those two things are quite different from the third. I want to get to that in a minute. But it's, in my experience, there is a growing need for frontline customer service people to understand the competitive landscape. It's not just the sales folks who need to understand the competitive landscape, because the leverage that customer service gives a business today is far greater than it's ever been, because there's more competition. And the competition isn't just around the price of the good or the service. It's around the total cost of doing business with that company. And I can't tell you the number of times customers have said to me, but I'm the low price provider. But when they do an after action review of why they lost a particular customer, inevitably it will be the total cost of that relationship that counts. Which leads me to the third bullet there, which you might find unusual for a slide like this in customer relationships, but appreciating the importance of talent management to the success of your business, it's critical. Hiring people who are committed to this level of professional customer service, who understand the landscape, who understand how to use tools and training, and are willing to get on the phone to fix problems quickly, to be proactive, to learn from experience. These are special kinds of people, and they're out there. And you know, Dana didn't ask me to give a plug for his business, but boy, I was talking to a colleague the other day, and they were complaining about they couldn't get good people. And I said, well, they're out there, but you need to be more artful and use the tools that are available, like Dana's organization, to help in the selection process. And once they're on board, they need to be supported, they need to be trained, you need to listen to them, because very often the way in which talent is managed can have an enormous impact on the way in which your business is viewed in the outside world, including, by the way, finding ways of making deals with your key customers to trade some talent, to do some cross-training, you know, because there's an enormous value that education and understanding can do to strengthen those important ties within the supply chain or within your customer value chain. So I just want to define a term here, the meaning of a mindset, pretty clear as you read this. David Logan is a colleague and professor at SC, uses linguistics a lot in his work. As people see the world, so they behave. A longtime friend and colleague, when I was at Xerox for 15 years, I hired Warren Bennis because he had gray hair and I didn't. Now we both do. but Warren is a fabulous, I would say he's kind of, he inherited the sage, I guess, identifier from Peter Drucker, not a relation when Peter passed away, but Warren has written, I think, 25 books on leadership, just a remarkable human being. And, you know, he said it pretty simply, behavior is directly correlated to perception. To change behavior, you have to shift perception. And very often, we all do it. We all complain about customers, or we complain about our frustration with how our people are handling or not handling customers, or we hear people in the call center complaining about customers. And it's amazing how attitudes leak in our way of interacting. So I'm not saying we shouldn't be genuinely communicating what we feel and what we think, but I am saying, as leaders and managers of customer relationships, it's really important to get underneath those frustrations. We have a saying in our firm that when we have a complaint, or when our clients have complaints, or when our people who are doing customer issues have complaints, and we ask them to teach this to their customers, if you have a complaint, turn the complaint into a request and make that request of someone who can do something about it. Because what you want to do is notice complaints are just a way of venting. And we all have recreational complaining. You know, complain about the weather, complain about the team that didn't make the Final Four, complain about whatever you, you know, are complaining about. But complaints are a way of venting, and we bond around complaints. But if you're in the business of being a professional and servicing customers, it's so important to understand the physics of turning a complaint into a meaningful request and making that request of someone who can take action on it. Because your job is to turn those frustrations into action and resolution in a cost-effective and timely way. So mindsets matter, and when you find pockets of frustration, whether they are in relationship to what you're doing as a service provider, or your folks are finding it frustrating dealing with customers, or you find as you reach out into your customer base that they're frustrated, the cycle time of understanding and learning is critical. And to do that, you have to have a positive mindset. And I've been very impressed with the articles in the first issue this year of the Harvard Business Review, which has on its cover happiness. But when you dig into the articles, it's actually about positive psychology, which, as Dana know, I have the good fortune to be trained in positive psychology, which is the application of the principles of human behavior, not just to the correction of pain or problem, but actually to help people self-actualize and to grow and develop by using their capacities to improve themselves and the people around them. And the Harvard Business Review issue, the first part of this year, has got some really terrific articles.
A question just came in. If you might have any exercises that can be used to find out how staff members, what the staff members' mindset is regarding customers.
Well, what I find is when a leader or a manager takes the time to sit down in a quiet place and say, how's it going? What do you see? What can you let me know that will help me as a leader improve the business and the way we do our business and the way we help you and support you as a frontline person do your job better? People usually respond very positively to that. If we're doing something called a skip-level interview, which means that there's a manager or two between you and the person you're speaking to, you obviously want to get those managers understanding that what you're doing is collecting information, not about them, but about the process and about the business. But genuinely speaking, the best exercise is to ask. And if you can't do it face-to-face, you can do it virtually. You can set it up with an email or a voicemail. Let them know it's a program that you're doing, and you're either, depending on how many people, you may be randomly selecting them. You may invite them to volunteer to be to have a conversation with you. But the other important thing about that is then the manager is often in a good position to then send back a summary, sanitized of people who said what, but a summary of what they've learned, and therefore the actions that are going to be implemented or the insights that will lead to some refinements of policy or procedure. That kind of dialogue creates feedback, and that kind of feedback creates learning, and that kind of learning creates an improvement of the customer service experience and process.
So whether somebody is a receptionist working a bulldozer, manning or personing a fuel truck out on the tarmac of an airport, a janitor,
yep.
It's all important above. Across the board, isn't it?
Yeah, all across the board. I think, you know, one of the, I'm not a big reality TV fan, but I know that makes me an outlier right away, but I have seen a few episodes of Undercover Boss, and what I think it reveals is a kind of manifestation of what I've just talked about, which is a fairly standard program. When I was at Xerox years ago, we implemented this around the globe. We asked our leaders to go down one or two levels and just talk to people, and to make sure that there was no fear that whatever they said would be communicated in a way that was untoward. And obviously different cultures require different sensitivities, and different kinds of backgrounds in education require different kinds of approaches. But fundamentally, it's just asking people, talking to them about what they see and what they observe and what they notice. And as that TV show, if many of you have seen it, reveals, is that people on the front lines care. They really care. You know, rarely do we see people wake up in the morning and not care that they do the best job they can. Rarely do we see people, you know, kind of turning off and being negative or hostile automatically, you know, right out of the box. Typically what we see is people being frustrated, thwarted, and unwittingly impeded to do what they believe is in the right, is the right thing to do in the service of supporting customers. They may need more education because they don't understand the cost of, let's say, shipping by air versus, you know, just trying to fix the root cause of the problem. So they may be missing some things, but genuinely, people want to do the right thing. And generally speaking, asking those questions, collecting that information, sharing it more broadly, will make the leader in a position to have really improved and give the people a sense that somebody cares. And so I would say that that's a really simple and cost-effective way, because you get a bang on two levels for your time and your buck, so to speak. You get data that's very important, and you get employee engagement, which is priceless.
That's really great. Thank you, Tom. Great segue into the next slide, too.
Okay, let's go to the next slide. Creating and sustaining great relationships. I suspect a lot of people know about emotional intelligence. If we look at customer service interactions, it is the kind of underlying physics. We want to train our people and ourselves, frankly, to listen beyond the words, to the meaning and the mood that people are expressing. We want to encourage active empathy, which is speaking with the intention that the other person feels understood and appreciated. A colleague talked about the fact that most of us listen through a filter of the past. We listen to, well, gee, I've already heard that before. And we fail to feel that that person is creating that message anew, because we've heard it 20 times. We inadvertently, automatically can alter our listening to a kind of reduced bandwidth. And what we know about repairing customer service relationships and building systems that really function is it's very important to understand the frontline people and what they're seeing and what they're wanting to be communicating. So we need to listen with active empathy, and we need to learn when there are upsets within the organization or within our organization and customers, that the speed of repairing and recovery can actually make a huge difference in saving a customer and turning a frustrated customer into a satisfied customer. It isn't that there won't be breakdowns. Of course there will be. It's the speed and the quality of the recovery, and do the people, particularly business-to-business relationships, feel that the company really cares. You know, very often, you know, we may feel that our customers think we're a number, or they're a number, rather. And what we want to do is make them feel like they're actually important. I have a CEO client who says it this way. He says, you know, all of our customers have a number, and the number's one. All of our customers are number one. Because when you're talking to that customer, they must be number one. And I applaud him for that, because he has integrated that into every person in his 2,500-member organization. They know that, and they absolutely have demonstrated that through the experiences that they've shared, and that's both externally in their supply chain and in their customer chain, as well as in their internal relationships.
Tom, we just had a number of questions come in, and this would make another great open line if you'd want to do this, about how to help employees become better listeners. And people have stated it in different ways, but it's basically the same question. We've actually had a half dozen people write it in.
That is a whole program, and I'd love to do that.
Okay, we'll do that another time.
Listening is one of the passions of my life. I have learned this over the years. There's some tools and skills that we can give them in an hour that I think would be extremely helpful, and some templates that would be fun to share.
Okay, we'll book that in the near future.
And you know, just to send a little sort of message topic about that, people really enjoy learning about listening because they can take those tools home and share it with their spouse and with their kids. So when you teach people listening skills, it can change the mood and the tenor of the relationships in their life that matter most, which is their familial relationship. So it's a, again, it's a way to not only help your employees be better at what they do, but also give them the skills and tools that they will cherish and use, because it will help improve the quality of their life.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so I think we're on the next slide here, which is stories from the front lines of customer service. Supplier to supply chain partners. Listen, I think we all know that there has been some real disruptions in the supply chains around the world, due to everything from the rare earth metals being scarce or the commodity markets being, you know, priced up because of large players in China for the most part, or just as I was mentioning, you know, when product quality sucks, you know, you go back and you work with your supply chain, and that has its own set of issues and problems. But the thing that I've seen that really is important is to have standards and to share those standards with your supply chain partners, and to put in a process where they are able to understand and come up to those standards. I have companies that deal with Walmart, and they've been doing this for decades. But in the last few years, they've been doing it around sustainability, so that we've seen when we purchase things, the packaging is totally different, much more recyclable and much less costly. We've seen the way in which the supply chain begins to actually add value to the end user experience. And so I've seen in my work the enormous importance of the relationships in the supply chain being much more partner-centric and much less vendor-like. And I think that's a sort of a high-level description of what I mean by you improve customer service when you can not only make the supply chain function better, but to have the owners and operators of the supply chain companies become more like partners and less like vendors. I just have to tell this story because it's so classic. My wife drives a Prius. She had one. It was coming off lease. She wanted to get another one, and it seemed reasonable to go to our local Toyota dealer. We had purchased the previous one through a car broker that we've used for years, and but you know, they were having sales, and so this is a few months ago, and so she went over to her dealership and just, you know, walked in, and the guy talked to her like she was a woman. She is. But, you know, like, I came back and she said, I can't believe in today, 2012, this guy treated me, you know, the way he did. So she said, I'm not going to put up with this. And, you know, she called Randy, who's the lady that's gotten his cars for years. And Randy said, well, you know, they're having sales, so you might want to consider going back there because you can get a 2011 for a lot less than I can get one. So she said, which he's not necessarily, you know, he said, okay, Tom, you're going to have to play the heavy here. Come over with me. And I was in the middle of some stuff, so I decided I would call the sales manager. And I called the sales manager, and I just had a very candid conversation with him. I introduced myself very nicely, and I said, listen, we want to buy a car, but you should know that your salesman just, you know, went through every classic disrespectful interaction you can imagine with my wife. I said, so here's my request. If you repair that relationship by either getting her someone else or, you know, having this guy really fall on his sword, and you give her the deal that I know is in the marketplace, we'll get the car from you. Otherwise, if you don't, we'll get it from our car broker. I said, and I really don't care. I said, but if I were you, I would care. So he said he would work on it. He called me back in about 5 minutes. He said, I got to the bottom of it. I'm truly sorry. I apologize. If you send my wife over, I promise there won't be a problem. She'll be delighted. And in fact, Marcia did go back there, and it was a flawless experience. They apologized. They treated her like a full person. And I don't know what happened to this guy that was on the floor the first time, but it was a good example of you tell the truth, you speak your truth, and you do it without edge or attitude. It's amazing what people can do. And then the other thing is, Sometimes people don't understand how difficult their business is to do business with, and the cost of doing business includes the ease of doing business with a company. So I was saying when I was putting this together, we were having some difficulties with Verizon, and I have a couple of people that work in my office, and they were spending an enormous amount of time on the clock dealing with these issues, and I found there was a way to transfer to Time Warner Business Class, and they gave me what their ads really promised, which was a first-class customer experience. And it wasn't about the cost of the monthly service. It was about the ease at which they are willing to put themselves on the line, give you a cell phone number, you can contact them, you can get answers quickly. And it really was an example of how they re-engineered the customer service process as a way to acquire and attract and keep the customers. So I wanted to share that with you, not to promote them as a business, but to say that this interface of how easy you are to do business with matters. It isn't just the cost of the service. It's the quality of those relationships that matter. So, and they matter one conversation at a time. This is something else that's sometimes important to train people in our, both ourselves. Because, by the way, Dana's probably heard me say this before, but I started my professional life very young. I was kind of picked by Xerox at an early age. I was in my mid-20s to do some work for them. They then promoted me to run an organization, which I was far too young to have the experience to do, but I did it anyway. And to be very kind of G-rated around here, I was very difficult to do business with. I was very difficult because I was arrogant. I just gotten all these degrees and all this training, and I was, I was certain of certain things, and I disregarded relationships because I thought content and being accurate, being smart mattered more than being gracious and considerate. And the speed counted more than the wake I left with the people I worked with. And thankfully, there were some really good, much more mature people around me than I was who took me aside and kind of gave me a wake-up call. So I come to these lessons through my own journey. Thankfully, I'm a pretty quick learner. And some of those people that I behaved really badly to, just treated harshly, are still friends of mine. Because one of the things that's so wonderful about human beings is our elasticity around human beings. Once we demonstrate we care beyond the transaction, once we demonstrate that we actually are people with hearts as well as heads, once we demonstrate that there are consequences to the way we speak and what we say, hopefully those qualities that make us fabulous human beings persist. But it's very important that we train all of ourselves and the people who are on the front lines in the metrics that matter and identifying trends. Because, we're all in the business of serving customers, and we do it one conversation at a time, and every once in a while it's important that someone help us step back and look at the trends and to ask the question, what are we learning? And when I talk about metrics, I want to be clear, as it says in the bottom of that slide, the learning matters more than counting. What we're learning about our customers, what we're learning about our ability to serve them, what we're learning about our ability to do business in a way that is cost-effective and leaves people with a feeling of being served and being cared about and being honored, as a business, means more than each individual transaction. So it's like developing any muscle. I could go on about this as well, but I also realize we have 15 minutes left, and I want to make sure that we leave time for questions and discussion. But let me talk a little bit about happiness. The happiest people don't just have the best of everything. They just make the best of everything. Training your brain to be positive is not so different from training your muscles at the gym. Recent research on neuroplasticity, the ability of the brain to change, even in adulthood, reveals that you can develop new habits, and as you develop those habits, you rewire the brain. So early in my career, I studied with people who invented the concept of self-actualization, and Abraham Maslow, and created the field of applying psychology to the field of business. I was very fortunate to be in the right place at the right time. And a lot of what was done at that early stage was called the soft science. I'm sure you've all heard, you know, the soft and the hard science. You know, finances is hard, engineering is the hard science, and the sort of human side of the enterprise is the soft stuff. Well, you know, I guess if you live long enough, not only do you get to see things change, but you get to see new facts and new tools that reveal facts come into the world around us. And so through using brain scans and other forms of measurement, we now know that the brain is much more elastic and, as they say, neuroplastic than we think. We know that the physiology of the brain when we are being creative and constructive is very different than when we're being defensive or angry or upset. And so, oddly enough, the people on the front lines of customer service are now being given new tools, new methods, new approaches to help people be, in fact, using their creative self. And again, I refer you to something that's been in the popular culture a lot. The fellow who created Zappos wrote a book about customer service. They actually have trainings that the company can purchase, like Disney used to purchase. Disney used to sell. They still do, actually. You can go down to Orlando and you can take your team through customer service training. And it's pretty good. I've taken clients down there. But I would say the new hot offering on the block is Zappos in Vegas. You know, I'm sure you've seen videos. If you don't, you can do, you know, look on YouTube. You'll see some stuff. Now, I have had a CPA firm go through that training, and they've done some strange things that have backfired because you can't have a CPA firm with people walking around, you know, in bathing suits and ringing bells and, you know, looking and acting like a frat house. It just doesn't work, even though the employees, you know, might want to try that out for a while. So everything has to be tempered through the lens of what's going to work for our business model with our customers and our employees. But the Zappos culture is a very, very important, I think, demonstration today of how creative people can be who do pretty straightforward, you know, call center work. And then the other thing that's important here is working hard for something we don't care about creates stress. Working hard for something we love is called passion. And what differentiates people who are stressed from people who are passionate is often the relationships that they are closest to around them at work. The leaders and managers who care and demonstrate concern and appropriate interest, whether it's we want to, you know, have a better CRM system / software, so let's get a few people together and work with the vendor, and, you know, you help us make the purchasing decision, rather than someone buying something and saying, okay, now you're going to be trained in this. Whether it's giving people a sense through those step-level interviews I spoke about earlier, that someone in leadership really wants to listen to what they say and what they see. Giving people access to the strategy of the company so that they can see how their work makes a difference every time they're on a call with someone or every time they're in the field with someone, so that they feel a sense of appreciation for what they're doing and how their work matters. Believe me, customer engagement, employee engagement today is one of the most important things that can drive customer service, because when your employees care, they will be creative and they will go out of their way to do the right thing. And again, it isn't just about, you know, shipping everything by air. You have to give them enough dialogue and engagement within the company so that the decisions they make are the right decisions, not just immediately, but for the long term. And that takes having relationships and sharing with them information that may historically not have been shared. So it means a level of transparency and intelligence that is important. And giving people who may be on the front lines and maybe being paid close to minimum wage salary some insight and information that might have historically not been thought to be of interest to them or that they would have the interest to absorb. There's a concept been around for a long time called open book management. Again, you can Google this and see it, but it's a way of demonstrating through templates and training. And when I say training, I don't mean day-long training. I mean a 15-minute, something just done on the factory floor that can give people insight into what the company's doing and how their work really matters. So we're all about making sure that customer service isn't just an abstract idea. It certainly is, as Dana said, a category of software, which you're going to get some insight in a couple of months in. But what I've built my professional life doing is helping to give people a chance to make work a form of creative self-expression. And there's something very tangible about being in the field of customer service, because you know what? You see it, feel it, and notice the results every time you have an interaction. And you want to notice that if you focus on those interactions, helping people design them and execute them so that they're getting increasingly more agile and effective at it, you will be doing your business a great service, you will be doing your customers a really great service, and you will also be helping your employees live a life of meaning and purpose through their work.
Wow, that's a beautiful retention model all the way around, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel that, and I see it in my work, and I see it in the eyes of the people and the managers when they come back from having these sessions with, what we do is help them design those kind of conversations, execute them, and then extract the learning. They just are excited because for some of them for the first time, they've learned some things, they've been able to apply some things, and they see how to sustain those kinds of dialogues and those relationships in ways that really make a difference. Because genuinely people want to make a difference. They want the people around them to feel positive and passionate about their work. And, of course, very often they don't. Very often people are scared at work. They're oppressed and feel jammed up. And so whatever we can do to help shift that experience really adds value to the company and adds value to the lives of the people, because at the end of the day, as the Harvard Business Review said sort of bluntly, happier people live longer.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I've worked at a number of projects, and Tom does not only the huge stuff, but also regional, domestic, and global. And what's really interesting is that whatever size company it is, Tom makes it so personal, so it's easy for people to translate the information across the board to whatever the level of the person is internally, but also externally. In just a few minutes after we conclude this show, I'm going to turn off the recording equipment. We're going to open up the line so you can have an opportunity to talk directly with Tom. I'm going to ask everyone that stays on to please put your individual phones on mute and then unmute your phone when you have a question for Tom. Otherwise, we're going to have too much background noise. You'll see in your screen an area to register for our upcoming April 10th Open Line program, which is entitled, What About Technology That Can Transform How You Do Business? Victor Avalos will be hosting that or providing information on that. Please sign up today and reserve your space for yourself, and if you know others in your staff or other colleagues that you'd like to attend, please pass along the information. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and PowerPoint for today's program. Please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Tom and I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that have been shared. If you'd like to contact Tom to have further discussion on specifics about your industry, your team, or to have some one-to-one time together, or to discuss any of the ideas shared today, you'll see Tom's contact information on your screen. The information shared today is a property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in San Juan, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insights to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. We're going to have Tom back on to talk about listening in a few months. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Please hold the line.
Dana, just to reinforce what Dana said, if any of you have specific questions about your company or what you're trying to do, be happy to respond to emails or voicemails, and no charge, anything, just to be of service to people who are committed to this field.
That's phenomenal, Tom. And I'll a couple of comments here just before we turn the recording off. I want to get on the recording.
Good.
Thank you for your kind comments, everybody. Very interesting. Great job, Mr. Drucker. This is phenomenal. I'm looking forward to talking to you further and hearing your listening program, and a lot of value, and the list is going on and on and on. Let me turn the recording off, and so please hold the line. We'll be right back, and then we'll open the line up for everybody.